two, one, two, three, four.
Well, there'd be no loneliness all around the world if every little boy got a big bone man. Big bone man in the middle of the night. You wake up in the morning and you're feeling all right.
That was the Dust Bowl Revival with the classic toe tapper, Big Bone Gal. Dust Bowl Revival comes to the Temporary tomorrow night with the Shook Twins opening. That'll be a good show. And stay tuned tomorrow at KDNK at 1 o'clock as the Shook Twins visit KDNK for an in-studio. Hello, Indigenous Earthlings. Here we are again, seven revolutions later, balancing into yet another Express Yourself. I'm Luke Nestler. Leave it to five Australians to show we Americans ourselves. That's what five young long-haul bicycle riders have done with their film Bikes of Wrath. If you notice the resemblance of that title to a certain American novel from the 1930s by John Steinbeck, well, that's no accident. It's tempting to say these gentlemen found the real America on their journey. It's also tempting to say they found themselves. What I think they found was a good reason for all of us to hope that the current political divide might someday crumble into dust. The Bikes of Wrath couldn't be more timely. This film will have you on the verge of tears more than once and also make you laugh. And it receives its world premiere tomorrow afternoon in Carbondale at the Five Point Film Festival. And we are so lucky to have with us four of the principals involved in the movie. We have Cameron Ford. Hi, Cameron.
Hey, Luke. Thanks for having us. Beautiful intro. Thank you. That's great.
You're very
really
welcome.
Summed it up. We can just leave right now.
Okay. All right. It's over. See you guys. Charlie Turnbull's
here,
Luke, too.
Hey, Luke. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. You're so welcome. And Leon Morton is here. Hi, Leon.
Yeah, good to be here.
And Oliver Chiswell, too.
How you going?
So, are you happy with the movie?
I would say super happy. It's taken a long time to get it to this place.
What took it so long?
Well, we shot the entire trip, so 160 hours of footage over 30 days of traveling across America from Sallisaw, Oklahoma to Bakersfield, California. And when you're making a film like this where nothing is planned, every single thing that happens, you film it because you don't know what's going to be of use to you at a later point in the edit room. And then you whittle it down over months, over months, over months. And eventually you end up with this hour 40 long thing, which we're all super proud of. Yeah, absolutely.
Was that long editing process a group effort, or is it mostly you, Cam?
I'm the editor on the film, but Charlie's the co-director, co-producer, so okay. I'd send cuts to Charles and we'd have a chat over the phone and sit in a room together from time to time and really just kind of look at the beats, look at the scenes. It's also a 7-part series, which I know has nothing to do with this festival, but that really helped the process of whittling it down to a feature length.
Oh, okay.
So it's like a 7-by-45-minute series. And then we were like, okay, and now let's crunch it down even harder into a feature length version.
So take me back to the first germ of the idea of doing this.
Well, I think that was probably myself and Leon, both huge Steinbeck fans, and I was visiting Leon. He was working up in the mountains in a snow town, and we had gone on a few adventures before, and we were kind of just sitting around in the evening. I think we were drinking a beer, and we were...
Of course,
always. Always.
Just kind of thinking about new journeys we could go on and new adventures. And I'm pretty sure it was Leon. He said, you know, and he'd, I believe, recently finished reading The Grapes of Wrath. He said, what if we retraced, you know, the journey of the Joad family in that novel? And then we started talking about perhaps we'd do it on bicycles. And then from there, it just kind of, you know, evolved. But I mean, the original seed for the idea came probably 2 years before we did it. Mm. So we spoke about it as a group and we added ideas. And then finally, you know, the stars aligned and everyone had time off. Mm. And we jumped on a plane and we did it.
Huh. Is Grapes of Wrath a popular novel in Australia? Is that something you have to read in school?
No, absolutely not. I mean, I would say it's not particularly well known. The title would be well known, but as to how many people have actually read the book, I'm not too sure. Yeah. But I know it's in the public school system here in America still to this day, and it sells over 2 million copies a year in America.
Well, it's the kind of thing that teenagers dread because they have to read a 500-page novel.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But hopefully our film brings a very different angle to the book and the study of the book and the Dust Bowl migration.
So tell our listeners the connection between your trip and the book. How did that happen? How did that play out?
Well, I mean, it's the genesis for the journey. Ultimately, it's what sparked the whole thing off. But then, I think like we took our cues from the book in terms of the journey from Sallisaw, Oklahoma to Bakersfield, California. We took our cues financially. We were like, the Joad family had $160 back in 1939, but divided between 12 family members. So we stripped it back to, you know, the inflated version of that was $420 between five of us for 30 days to go do this 5-state odyssey. And to really like understand and try and dig deep on the Dust Bowl and the migration and really tap into small towns and the communities across America in the Bible Belt and the Dust Bowl sort of section of America. Yeah. So that's,
I think, it's a really important point to make, I think, is that this movie was, the idea started with the book and an adventure, but the movie, we hope, is so much more than just following a book or just about the book. Sure, that's an element of it, but it's about America. It's about the people. It's about the places, and the journey and the book is just the conduit to tell that story.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised at what you found on the road on Highway 66?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it'd be fair to say that everything was a surprise.
we
didn't know what to expect. But I think there were lots of surprises. I imagine the one that stands out to most of us, we'd all agree on as the biggest surprise and the most overwhelming one emotionally, was just how generous, honestly generous, everyone was that we came across. It was unbelievable. It's, you know, to reflect on it, it was just, you know, incredibly generous, warm people, and that we hope shows through in the film.
It does. Guaranteed, it does.
Just to ask a question back to you, like, at a time where politically everything's pretty, you know, messy and up in the air in America, like, did you watch this film? Because I know you watched it today on the online screener, but did it give you a little bit of a boost or a revival of your country, your people, or have you always sort of been on that path, irregardless of the film?
It did, absolutely. And, you know, but here's the thing, you know, most of the people in this valley, and I have to include myself in that many times, it's the same reaction that we get when we see a really dirty homeless person on the sidewalk. Mm. We kind of avoid them.
Yeah.
We're afraid to engage with them because they're not us.
Yeah.
The people that you found on the road fall into that category for most of the people in this valley. And so that's why it was an eye-opener for me.
Amazing, yeah.
You know, and that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly widens the lens, I do believe, at a time where America needs it most in the world. Because, like, we take our cues from America a lot of the time as Australians. Like, we're sort of a little bit, we wait to see what the world's doing and then we follow suit. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it's important for, you know, when we spoke to Meredith, who's programmed the film, and she's like, Americans right now are looking in the mirror and we don't quite know who we are. And this film is really important right now.
And it's also
to show that to us.
It's also really useful, I think, for Americans to see that we're all just people.
Yeah.
You know, and your film shows that very well.
Awesome.
Very thank
well.
You.
Yeah, great.
Well, you know, just in the way that you guys had an adventure, but you didn't make an adventure film.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't really. I mean, you mentioned politics in a tangential kind of way, but it's not about politics. It's about people interacting.
Yeah.
And I think that's
human
where the power of
really,
it comes
yeah,
from.
For sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, like, one of the most fascinating things to me, and I truly hope it's going to happen at some point, is that all the characters that we met along this journey will find themselves in a room together at one of our film screenings. And they've all got such different political views and life experience, and they're all from very different places. But the thought of those guys all being joined by this common thread, which is, you know, our journey, our film, that's really sort of an exciting thought for me down the track.
Well, just to give people a sense of the kind of characters that you met, maybe you could describe a couple or three of them, just to let them know, you know, who you ran into out there on Highway 66.
Yeah. I mean, I can start by talking about probably two of the characters that helped us the most, and they're actually arriving into Carbondale as we speak, and they'll be at the screening tomorrow, and that is Bernard and Leanne Hillhouse, and they are a pair of veterinarians who own a clinic in Wheeler, Texas. And I mean, they'd never tell you this because they're incredibly humble, but they are really the pillar of that community, or the pillars of that community. And some unfortunate events happened on the trip, and there were some injuries sustained, and we were probably at our lowest point, and we, you know, just pure luck, we were in this town and this couple took us in, and I think it's pretty fair to say we were all blown away by what they did for us, and I mean, that was repeated countless times throughout the film, but they'll be there tomorrow, and I think they'll be saying a few words on the stage. So
and they've never seen the film before, haven't seen a single frame of it, so that's super exciting for us to not only world premiere it to this like really important audience, but also to have some of these characters, real people that we met along the journey that helped us. Like, we would not have achieved this trip without the help of these people. To actually premiere it with them and to have that experience is going to be really special for us.
Huh. Well, I see that after you leave Carbondale, you're taking the movie on the road.
Yeah.
And you're going to Oklahoma.
That's
and
right.
Also Albuquerque.
Correct.
And probably other places in between.
We're really lucky with that. Like, ultimately, I think it is a universal story, but I think it's important for it to kind of hit in America first and then kind of radiate out from that, and we're lucky to be in 4 festivals to date with a bunch more kind of being decided soon. So opening night in Albuquerque, the only feature length film here at Five Point over the weekend.
And I think it, as much as this film and this story seems like it centers around a group of friends, I was doing this trip, really the film's about them. It's about the people that we visited. So it's their film. So to be able to take it back to those same towns, cities, the same people, and show them and show their friends and families, that's really powerful and important to us.
Mm-hmm. Do they know that you're coming with the film?
A lot of the main characters, again, characters is the wrong word, but the people that we met on the journey, real amazing humans, we've reached out to them and we're still in contact with most of them. And yeah, a bunch of them are coming to Oklahoma because it's like a 2.5-hour drive from where they live. So that's going to be a really great reunion of sorts. Bennett and Leanne, obviously, as Charlie said, are coming here to this event that they've driven for the last 2 days from Wheeler, Texas to come see the premiere. So yeah, it's kind of full circle, I think, for the film and the journey. For everyone to kind of be involved.
Was one of the guys that you kept up with the gentleman that was on his death march?
We have not been able to find him since.
You don't know what happened to him?
No. And that's still kind of quite tough to deal with to this day.
Yeah, well, it was hard to watch.
Yeah, for sure. Joe is not somebody that we have contact with right now, but we would love to find him again, and we've tried, but We hope he's okay.
Well, you know, here you are learning all these lessons about generosity, and all of a sudden you meet somebody on the road that it's your turn to be generous with him.
Yeah, it's the full 180 of the trip. Like, so many people up until that point in the film have helped us survive and carry on, and then, it flips for sure.
Yeah, it really does. Well, I'm wondering about whose idea it was, because it's throughout the entire movie, where you have the people you meet reading sections of The Grapes of Wrath. It ties the movie together. It illustrates the passages you chose to have them read, and after they read, the way that some of them face right into the camera, and the way that some of them are just obviously moved by what they just read. What an absolutely brilliant move.
Thank you. Yeah, I think we got in the edit room with it, and after 8 or 9 months, we're like, the journey is not enough, ultimately. Like, it's not enough to just show the depiction of this adventure from A to B. And so Charlie and I jumped on a plane and we came back to America.
Oh.
And it was after a lot of rereading of the book and finding the paragraphs that really glued the film together. And it was very detailed and structured about which character would read which chosen paragraph from the book that would tie this section through to this section through to this section. So yeah, that stuff was shot a year and a bit after the fact, but once we'd achieved that and put it back into the edit, we knew that that was the glue that tied the whole beast together.
And we were doing that was real along the trip. We had the book with us, and we were reading passages together, and falling asleep reading a passage of the book out loud as we're falling asleep under the stars in Texas or Oklahoma, New Mexico, wherever we were for the night. So, we did live that book as well at the time. We just didn't have that on camera. So to go back and document that, it tied it all together.
And it was like, we did film a couple of those beats, but coming from us, like, there was like the balance ultimately is like, we're the ones on this journey, but then tying back in those characters, those people to read those paragraphs. That's like the true glue of the thing. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was maybe it comes across in the film, but we generally got into camp super tired as well, and we were exhausted.
Yeah, I could tell.
And filming everything was, you'd just ride 90 miles in a day, and then you'd meet a bunch of people, and you'd pick up a camera, and so doing that without a support vehicle or without, someone driving behind and assisting us to capture everything was probably one of the biggest challenges.
Well, at some point you guys decided to jettison the trailers and the drum set that you were carrying with
quite a heavy bass. Oliver, tell us more about that.
the drum kit. It was heavy.
Yeah, yeah.
Unfortunately, my bike couldn't carry a trailer, or so we thought, for the first half of the trip.
Yep.
And then we figured out that it was exactly like the other bikes. So, and then when we figured that out and I did a trailer for a couple of days, we realized like, these are really heavy. Yeah, and so yeah. we did one last and one first big busk.
Yeah.
Made as much money as we could and then just sold everything we had in the trailers that we didn't need.
Well, I liked how you put the stiff arm on the gas station.
Yeah.
So
Daniel Charis, really.
You think you might want to buy this old guitar?
Yeah.
We actually visited him when we returned, and he's still got that gear out back.
He hasn't taken it to the local.
That was a charity, an act of charity from Daniel.
Very generous. Very generous.
That was really funny. It sort of reminded me of that scene in Wild.
Oh yeah,
where she is just starting off and she's packed her pack in her motel, she's ready to hit the trail the next day and she can't even get off the floor.
I mean, we were clueless, we didn't know how to stand our bikes up properly. As you've seen in the film,
I noticed they kept falling over.
Four beats in which the bikes just absolutely crash to the ground each and every time.
Really funny. Well, I think I read that you have another project in mind that's also based on an American classic book. Is that something you want to talk about?
Well, it's actually, we've finished filming it, yeah.
Oh, you've already done it.
Yeah, so Charlie and myself and our friend Octavia from Sydney, Australia, we built a homemade raft and we went down the Mississippi River for 90 days from the top of the country at the headwaters in Minnesota through to New Orleans. On $212 for 90 days, retracing the Huckleberry Finn path, but looking at race relations in America today through that lens.
So did you find a gym to go along with you?
We were all gyms at some
point. We were all.
Okay, there you go.
We had a few guests on the raft that came with us, and we were chatting before at the panel, and we met this amazing guy by the name of Jay who jumped on the raft with us for a couple of days. He was African-American, black, and he was like, how do I get on this raft? And we're like, you just pack a bag and you come with us. And we're in the edit room with that right now, and it's a pretty timely story for the follow-up to Bikes of Wrath, to look at, you know, race relations today in America, but from an outsider's perspective, ultimately.
I wonder if Australia is struggling with immigration issues and racial issues also.
We certainly have our own issues that are slightly different from what's happening here. But I mean, the way we treat refugees and asylum seekers is a really controversial issue at the moment. And it's, I think we'll all agree, probably pretty shameful.
It's pretty terrible.
What's happening in Australia. And that's a good question, and I know a lot of people have asked me personally, you know, why don't you read a book about your own country and explore your own country? And that's something I'd definitely like to do, and something we'll probably think about doing, because we're by no means saying that coming over here and saying that Australia is, you know, is perfect in these issues.
But I will say that it's about access. So we're inquisitive people from another land that want to come and discover more about America. We're fascinated with America. If we were to do the same thing in Australia, we should know the answers to a certain extent. But whereas we travel to America and here we are, and we're kind of sponges, we're blank canvases. Like, we've got questions, but we want to know more. We want to sponge it up. And I think people are so open to that. Like, the amount of times that we would meet people and then, because we had an American buddy of ours who joined us on the raft for an entire week. And people closed down, like they didn't really want to tell us the stories of their small towns, their worlds, their lives. And then the moment he left, everyone was open again. And so it's like this access point where we're genuinely curious and inquisitive about a country that fascinates all of us. But people and their openness to that, I think that's the access. And in Australia, I truly do believe that if we were to do a journey like that, yeah, cool, it'd be good. But like I said, we should know the answers already. Like we were born there, we live there. Like it's our country. We, you know, so that access is already, you know, a thing.
So if you had to sum up what you each of you learned, how would you do it?
Well,
I know that's a pretty loaded
I would say it's complicated. That's what I learned. Yeah. It's an incredibly complicated country, and you go in with stereotypes, and they're really quickly demolished. And you know, 99% of the time, people are really good and decent and generous. And I guess that's what I learned.
Yeah.
Something just hopeful, I suppose, about the future. For America, it's, you know, times there's a lot of despair and uncertainty. But having covered a lot of the country and spoken to a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life, I mean, I think you guys are in pretty good hands. You've got some amazing people in this country with amazing hearts and genuinely care about this place and want to make it better for everyone. And that's really hopeful.
Oliver?
I think I like that... that saying of not judging a book by its cover, and kind of like, I'd never been to America. This was like a good reason to do a trip and also get a pretty unique perspective going through the middle of America. And yeah, I think it was just like we were saying earlier, not what I was expecting. A lot of like really real people and super generous people. Not that I was expecting something from the other side, but like it was just, yeah, it was completely out of the blue. And I was just, yeah, really, grateful, I guess.
Cam,
what was the question again?
What did you learn personally? And I've got a follow-up question for all of you after that before I let you go.
Just that human connection is alive and well, and the sum of all its parts can make something that's insurmountable surmountable. Like, that's for both of these trips, from the Bikes of Wrath to Flooding with Hark. Like, we're down and out so many times in these journeys. It's so unplanned. It's so rookie so much of the time. we're really not very good at what we should be doing well. And people come out of the woodwork, you know, and that's the greater question. It's like, are we attracting those people, or are those people aware inherently that we need help? I don't know what it is, but people gravitate towards these open adventures. To get it back on track every single time. And both of these adventures would have got 100 miles up the road and fallen apart if it wasn't for the generosity of just good humans coming out to set it back on track.
So you learned something important. Has it changed the way you behave with your fellow human beings?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, you from time to time, of course, you get stuck back in your own headspace, in your own world, but... you know, something as simple as, not simple for the person suffering, but like a homeless person on the side of the road when you're walking through your city, and the difference between walking past them and sitting down with them and having a chat and going, what do you need right now? What can I do to help? And that happened to me like a week before I came here. I was like, do you want a meal? She's like, I'd love some fish and chips. I was like, I'll go sort that out for you. You know, and just listening and seeing what people need to get by, I think is really important.
Well, if you just joined us, we've been talking to the makers of The Bikes of Wrath, which receives its world premiere tomorrow afternoon. It starts at 2, right?
2:30, yeah.
2:30.
And there's a Q&A afterwards with our special guests all the way from Wheeler, Texas.
And I understand there are still a few tickets left.
I believe there's a couple left, yeah.
So,
act fast.
Yeah. So, it's a fire sale.
it's going to sell out quickly after this.
Awesome.
Anyway, I want to thank you gentlemen for coming in. It's a really great film, and I look forward to seeing the Mississippi River.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thanks very much.
Yeah. Thanks for having us, Luke.
All right, stay with us. There is more to come. Western Centuries, in fact, coming up next here on Express Yourself.
Dark as it could. shades of light until the dawn. We all get to be so broken hearted. And how many more miles to Babylon? Beneath the July sun, see, we're all children of the same one. All
two new songs from a band called Western Centuries called How Many More Miles to Babylon and Far From Home. And both of those from their brand new CD, Songs from the Deluge. Someone called the music of Western Centuries honky tonk music with vocabulary. Well, that just about nails the sound of this band, which is now touring behind the release of its second album. And that's what you just heard, that brand new CD. That tour brings them to Steve's Guitars Tonight and to Express Yourself Right Now. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, thanks.
Hi, how are you?
How's everything?
That's good. All right.
Good. Are you happy with the new CD?
Very much so.
How so?
Well, it's nice to have a new product out, obviously, but this new album is probably a closer representation of the direction of the band that relative to our first one. It's a real like equal spread amongst the three of us, and we really developed our sound, I feel like, on this new album, and so we're really proud of it and really happy about how it came out.
Recorded in Louisiana.
That's correct. Yeah,
yeah, you can tell some of those Zydeco flourishes.
Yeah. We're really fortunate enough to have an incredible producer in Joel Savoy and some of the musicians that he that he recruited to fill out some of the songs. It was a real great experience.
That's Ethan Lawton talking. Ethan is a guitarist and one of the songwriters and one of the singers. Also
one
in the and the drummer too. I was going to get to that. That's pretty impressive. Kahalen Morrison is also in the band. Welcome, Kahalen.
Thanks a lot.
And Jim Miller is here too. Hi, Jim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thanks. And Leo Grossel, did I say that right?
Well, actually, Leo was the one on the recording, but he couldn't do this tour, so...
Oh, okay.
Fortunately, we have Dusty Ryder playing pedal steel for us, and he is a great friend and an incredible musician, so we're real lucky to have him.
The pedal steel is...
Shut up, Dusty.
Shut up and play.
Yeah. He's in the other room.
The pedal steel is a crucial part of your sound, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the hallmarks.
Yeah, and we've been really fortunate to have four or five pedal steel players that play with us, two on the recordings that we've done that are just incredible, great musicians, so we're real lucky.
And we also have the bass player with us, Nkosi, did I say that right?
Nkosi.
Yeah. Fields. Welcome to you all. How about a tune? You have some instruments in your hands. I'd love to hear something.
We do. So we're going to do one that's also on the new record called Borrow Time. Shape you're in, and your nerves shine bright like a candle in the night. There's a fire on the hill, let it rage too hot to kill, but the the wound with a tear, borrow time and pay tomorrow, 'cause that's all we're doing here. Yeah. You can pay sound. Thank you.
That's the Western Centuries live at Katie and Kay, playing tonight at Steve's Guitars. And by the way, Steve kindly offered to put out two free tickets to a caller here to Katie and Kay, 963-0139. Call and claim those two tickets from Steve's Guitars tonight for Western Centuries. So the three of you are the songwriters in this album, Ethan and Jim and Kahalen. Each of you wrote four songs.
Yes,
on the
we
album.
Divided it evenly.
And do you normally sing the song that you wrote? Is that the way it works?
Yes, that's how we do it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It might not be advisable all the time, but that's how we do it.
Why?
To this point.
And we might abnormally do it sometimes.
Well, I watched several videos where Ethan, you, and Kahalen were swapping seats behind the drum set and
right,
the guitar and singing. What else do you guys are all multi-instrumentalists, I guess, huh?
Yeah. There's no mandolin on the recording, but due to space in here, we brought my mandolin in to play, and Kahalen and I both, you know that Kahalen plays mandolin, but I also play it, so we do a little bit of that sometimes, too.
You know, it's interesting to me that there are three strong voices in a band. That takes a certain kind of egoless attitude. To maintain that.
Yeah, it's really cool, to be honest with you. It's a neat experience and all of that stuff, because we're all really happy to have any of the songs recognized on this album. So there's very little competition, and it's really fun to decide what songs go on the record, too, and decide what fits in this band. It's all good exercises in being humble and patient.
Well, I'm thinking if there are three of you writing songs, you must have a whole bunch of songs that aren't even on record.
Yes.
So that's kind of cool. You have a great repertoire already for your live shows.
Yeah, and if you can imagine, like, putting an album together is pretty easy, too, because each of us have to come up with four songs, essentially. At least that's how it worked on the last one. And That's pretty easy to do. We're ready to do another record if anybody wants to pay for it.
Well, you know, maybe you won't have to wait long, because I just got an email from the Americana Music Association this afternoon. Your record just debuted on the chart this week. Mm-hmm. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm wondering if community radio is important to the development of your band.
Oh, that's a loaded question.
But the answer is yes. And in all of the other bands, you know, that you mentioned that we've all kind of been here before in other bands, in all of those projects, absolutely. Community radio is still a huge part of how this music is disseminated, and the fact that people listen to it, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. We have some great local independent radio stations in Seattle that we both listen to and play on frequently.
Is that where you're based, Seattle?
That's where Kahalen and I live. Jim lives in New York.
Oh, okay.
Negosi lives in Durham, North Carolina. And Dusty lives in Colorado.
Yeah.
Okay.
Niwot.
He's our local shill.
I'd love to hear another tune.
Cool. Sure. This one's another one off the new record. It's called Warm Guns.
Western Centuries, live in the studios, Katie and Kay. I'll still be here waiting
lay down my warm gun. El camino de amor, cuando vidas se chocan, no es un borrador, es escrito en piedra el futuro de mi vida como poeta, es depende de sí. Estoy triste más de lo que debería. Está yo en llamas, si caballeros ven damas, la rueda de la mañana, mirar el oro.
Happiness is laying down your warm gun. You know what? We have to get out of here in 3 minutes. So can we do a quick 3 minute instrumental maybe or something? Or?
We'll get a song that's in there.
Okay. Western Century is playing tonight over at Steve's Guitars. And I want to thank you all for coming in to KD&K. I appreciate it a lot.
Thanks for having us.
You bet.
While you run, Dusty. 1, 2, 3, 4, 1.
From the forecast off so swiftly, did you run? Just like the prodigal son, dreams begun. Like the fortune found for free, so easily spent, and up around the bend, temptation smiles. keeps on turning into dust. You think you moved on up, but you're bound to fall. For deep down in your pocket hides a rose for the broken nose.
That is so sweet. Thank you, guys.